When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hello, welcome to CarCast and Edmunds Podcast. I'm Matt DeAndrea here with Alistair Weaver. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Hello, everybody. Friday afternoon is recording this. So I've been had a whack of caffeine and ready to go.
Ready to go. This isn't our normal recording time. It's been kind of a crunch time for you guys at Edmunds going through the numbers. There's a reality to, there's a business that has to happen, right? But part of the business for you guys is buying cars, not just getting press cars, but buying cars and objectively being able to test them, own them, live with them, put them out to the employees, take them on road trips, you know, put car seats in them and not really worry about, you know, hey, this is a prototype. This is a press car. I don't want to fuss up the leather or have my kid in there. Like, you guys buy a bunch of cars, but how do you guys put together a budget to figure out what you're going to buy? Which I'm sure is fun because you make a wish list of cars you want to buy and go, can we buy these things? And then kind of how does it happen?
Yeah. So we were just talking off air because I'm in we've sort of submitting our budgets for the year, which I'm sure if anybody's listening is probably going through the same thing at this time of year. So it's nice just to shut up and talk about cars for once. Yeah. How do we do it? Well, we basically look at the market and say, like, where's the interest? You know, what cars should we be running? You know, what cars are obviously, you know, going to generate a lot of noise, a lot of interest? What are, you know, significant vehicles? That's why, you know, big policy of buying EVs. And I know a lot of people watching this now on YouTube or indeed listening to us. And, you know, we'll be saying, why the focus EVs? Well, you know, frankly, it's the future. And it's also probably the most interesting part of the market as we start to buy a lot of the startups and things like that and see them evolve and see these cars grow through over the air updates. So we kind of came up with a list, and the reality is last year we put a kind of list together, and then when we looked at it and got to the end of the year, it's like actually we've barely been able to spend the money because so many vehicles have been delayed. You know, yeah. We haven't got our paws on a Cybertruck yet, although hopefully it's coming soon. Silverado EV, not here.
Yeah, that's delayed.
That's delayed. Tesla, new Tesla, the Model 3. Well, we just put an order in for that. We might get it in the next couple of months. There was a whole bunch of stuff, you know, Corvette E-Ray we were thinking about. We had the standard Corvette. We thought the E-Ray would be really interesting. Reality is, A, that car's, you know, still can't get hold of one, and B, you know, I'm not sure there's quite as much interest as there once was.
Yeah,
so
I just think the buzz kind of faded on that car. Like Z06 just seemed to, even if E-Ray's faster or has better numbers, it just seems like it's just not what Corvette customers are looking for, where the Z06 just all motor like that is just the way they wanted it,
yeah.
I guess.
It's the way Corvette is, isn't it? And then, you know, and then looking ahead, there's a lot of bunch of really interesting things coming in the next year. You know, Macan EV, I think, is a really interesting vehicle. It's going to be a ton of cash, but we went and had a look at that for the first time. You know, so it's... it's a strange thing. We're affected by the market like everybody else. Can you actually, you know, when these cars are delayed or you can't get into them, or if there's, you know, I think the days of markup have gone, apart from on the odd hyper exotic. But it's still, you know, there's still supply issues, as you know, and a lot of the EVs have been delayed, and
yeah,
it's same pressures as everybody else. But in some ways, that's part of the that's part of the fun and part of the experience of, you know, when can we get into these cars?
You know, we've got so many, you know, startup car companies right now that we kind of cut them a little slack because they're new. So we've kind of gone through the lineup of cars, and you guys have acquired a bunch of them. Fisker, Lucid, Rivian, you know, of course, Tesla. And there, maybe there's more on the horizon, you know, VinFast, Mullen, that you guys are going to get into at some point. And we kind of expect some flaws with those cars. But when somebody like BMW, Ford, GM, Audi, you know, who've been doing this for a while, come out with something new, even EV, you expect some sort of quality control. I guess we just don't cut them as much slack as we are the startup companies.
Yeah, well, I mean, guess as a company, we get into, you know, it's a difficult place because we talked a lot about the Chevy problems last week on last week's show, and about the, you know, the stop sale and everything else on the Blazer EV. The reality is our job is to advise consumers what to buy. So if I'm saying, you know, if you're asking me the purpose you have, like, Alistair, what do you think of this? I got to give you a straight opinion. And unfortunately, whether it's a startup or not, isn't kind of relevant to you, the car shopper, because you're looking for a vehicle that takes the kids to school most of the time. So I think you can caveat it and say, look, if you're buying a Fisker today, the Fisker that we just bought, the build quality, because it's built by the same people who build Mercedes and BMW and others.
Yeah.
The innate build quality is good. It's much better than Tesla was at this point, and
that's what we wanted.
It's way better than Lucid, way better than Tesla was at the beginning, way better than the Rivian was at first. I mean, the Rivian's pretty good actually, but the problem is their software is not quite here yet. So we're having a lot of problems with the software. So I think what you're saying to people is, it is a journey, and if you want an EV that's like fresh off the line, particularly a startup EV, you know, all our experience is suggesting that, you know, you're going to have to go on that journey with the manufacturer. So our Rivian generally has been pretty good, but we've still had a bunch of hardware updates and a lot of software updates. The Lucid has got better and better as they basically evolved the software. And then, you know, the GM Blazer EV, the Chevy Blazer EV that we talked about last week, that's still an ongoing problem. That's still going to go in and get fixed. They're still waiting to roll that out. And then the Fisker we bought, you know, has a bunch of predominantly software related problems that are, you know, causing concern. And we've just launched the first video on it on our YouTube channel now. And it's all about this narrative of, you know, buy this car, but you're going to go on a journey. And there are times when it's going to frustrate you probably while they sort out some of the stuff. And some of it is, they haven't done it yet. So like the first car we drove didn't really have cruise control, as we recognize, because they hadn't finished it.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the days gone by, like you wouldn't like launch a car without windows that open. But with software, it's, we'll sort it out over the air. Is that you raising your hand? I just saw something flash up my screen.
Does that mean
I want to talk?
You were doing a thumbs up, and it does the thumbs up when it sees you. I don't know why.
Is that right?
But yeah.
Oh, I thought it was you saying, shut up, I want to speak.
No.
How does it do that?
It's a thing in Zoom. I don't know. I just noticed it a couple meetings past that when you...
I've never seen that before.
When it sees...
Doesn't work with mine. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know why it does that.
Is that like raising a hand to speak? I don't know.
I don't know what other gestures it does. It's kind of weird. But I think of all the ones that you've been mentioning, GM and the Chevy Blazer is the big disappointment because they're not the new company. And Ford has been getting by fairly well with the Mach-E and the extent the Ford Lightning. And then for GM to go, we're delaying the Silverado. Maybe it's a demand thing. Maybe it's a technology thing. And then the Blazer to be released and have a stop sale. I guess that's a little... That's kind of a harsh blow for GM.
I think it's a harsh blow for the industry. Because I think, you know, if you're Jim Farley, Ford CEO, you know, you might have a wry smile about it, you know, because your big rival's suffering, but it's bad for the whole EV adoption thing.
Yeah.
And if they're betting the company on, you know, wholesale EV adoption, it's just bad. It's bad news for everybody.
Who is doing it right? Do we have BMW? Do we have anything from Stellantis that's going to be coming out, which I guess they're not quite there yet. Audi is e-tron is like, who's doing it right? You mentioned Rivian's doing pretty well.
I think of the startups, Rivian's, yeah. You know, Rivian's been pretty good, not perfect, but it's been pretty good. The one we were actually talking, we had these like video planning meetings and we're talking about what should we do? And one of that was about, you know, looking at all the EVs we've owned and the reliability. And the real standout for us, we have a BMW iX, which is polarizing to look at, but is a really great car, and that's been faultless.
Okay.
It was involved in an accident, but that can't really count against it. So the, in terms of just like the reliability of the vehicle, it's been amazing, faultless. And, you know, BMW has been doing EVs for a while, so they've probably got it, you know, they've probably got it right. We're excited that, you know, the i5 is coming as well. That's a great vehicle. So BMW has been great. But, you know, everybody else, Ford generally has done a good job. Volkswagen's done a good job. You know, the Lightning's had a few niggles, as you know, you own one. Mach-E had a few niggles, but nothing too dramatic, which I think has made the GM thing. I mean, it's not like GM, it's not GM's first EV, you know, different technology, very different technology to the Bolt. But, you know, the Bolt was actually a pretty decent little car. So we will see, but it doesn't do the whole EV adoption thing any good when, you know, you add reliability to the concerns about range and recharging and everything else.
Yeah. And what Chevy was going to be doing with the Blazer and getting into that price point in the more accessible, higher volume version of the EV, because we have some high end cars, obviously BMW is a little bit higher end. Rivian came in expensive, Lucid's expensive. Fisker is, you know, I guess initially expensive. I don't know where they're going to go from there. So it's kind of interesting, but, you know, and speaking of expensive, you were driving the Rolls-Royce Spectre, which, if people aren't aware, that's the electric version of the Rolls-Royce, which,
yeah,
I think the EV Platinum platform makes sense for them because it was always a big, heavy, high horsepower vehicle that was quiet and nice to drive. So making an EV version that's still quiet and comfortable and nice to drive is already heavy. You're not changing the game. We're not trying to add electric motors and a gas engine into some sort of plug-in hybrid and make it lightweight and have to juggle all the things, like, you know, like the complexities of trying to do the NSX, right? You don't have that with Rolls-Royce, and arguably in the future with Range Rover and their EV Range Rover.
Yeah, I mean, if you go, it all sort of goes back to when Rolls-Royce and Bentley were split off. And if you remember, Volkswagen grabbed Bentley. It was a big sort of German carve-up, wasn't it? That Volkswagen grabbed Bentley and then BMW grabbed Rolls-Royce. And, you know, sort of a bad day for British patriotism in a way, apart from the fact that the companies have survived and prospered and, you know, are still based in the UK. But so a lot of what this has allowed Rolls-Royce to do is basically borrow a lot of BMW stuff to develop an EV. So if you look hard at a Spectre, there's a lot of stuff in there that derives from the BMW i7, for example. But that's not a bad thing because it's a lot of proven technology and expertise. And yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a funny car. I mean, like, you know, look, this is not our heartland at Edmunds. Our heartland is like mainstream stuff, but it's an EV. We wanted to, like, you know, look at it as a benchmark. Rolls-Royce wanted us to do the range test and everything else on it so that we could, you know, they could share that data. And it's just a really interesting car to look at because I think recognizing their audience is a sort of weird mix, isn't it? Because it's conservative on one hand, but at the other hand, it's a big ostentatious display of wealth.
Yeah.
And historically, there's been a lot of kind of bling Rolls Royces. Like, you look, go back as far as like John Lennon in the 60s had these very kind of hand painted extrovert Rolls Royces. So it's so, but the look of it is still very old school Rolls. It's a coupe with the suicide doors. And
it's
if you
what,
haven't,
$450,000, something like that.
Starting price, yeah. I can get into the Monroney right, so on the car that we drove, but and it has like the hood is as big as most SUVs. Like the hood goes on forever. And we were in the office car park. So what the hell's under the hood then? Is it like a frunk? Because this thing is like, you know, it's as long as my house. And you open the hood, and all it's got is like a big aluminum sheet that says Spectre on it. And that's basically it. So it's like, what the hell's under here? Because so it's a massive car that can, you know, there are in the back, it's like one of those Rolls Royce coupes where there are kind of like, it's a proper-ish four seater. I managed to stuff the car seats in the back. In fact, my 4-year-old appeared to like have a ride in this Rolls Royce. And she was like, oh, I'm going to color in the back, Dada. I like appeared with a bunch of felt tip pens. And I was like, that ain't happening. I don't care how much if we have a complete meltdown over this. That's not happening, because that's your college education right there if you mark this car.
Yeah, so there's no real storage under the hood?
There's no storage under the hood. There's a decent trunk. So it's basically like a gas-powered Rolls-Royce coupe. Inside
like the Wraith was. It's
sort of an electric Wraith in many ways, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a, you know, it's a beautiful way to travel. It's, I'm not sure, no matter how real wealthy as well, it's ever quite me, just because it's such a statement of wealth.
Yeah,
like it's impossible just to sort of arrive in that, partly because it's massive. It's, you know, it's got the spirit of ecstasy, you know, at the front of it. The doors open in the suicide fashion, so everything's a spectacle. So you've just got to be very comfortable with saying, I am fabulously wealthy and I don't care, you know, it is.
And it has to still have that ride quality, that magic carpet ride that Rolls-Royce has been known for, right? Arguably one of the nicest driving vehicles out there.
Do you know what I really liked about it? Yeah, even on 23-inch rims, which is what it had. What I really liked about it is it's obviously a very digital car. It's an EV. But in many ways, it was very analog. In like the best Rolls-Royce tradition. So like the air conditioning doesn't have like, you know, it's not all digital. You actually just, you know, like rotate these little dials to turn it up and down, like really going the old school Rolls. You don't have like endless driving modes. You basically got an option of, do you want regenerative braking or not? And after that, you just drive the thing. There's no launch control. There's no sort of, it's quite an analog experience. The steering wheel in the best Rolls-Royce is huge and quite thin rimmed, and you just sort of like waft along, and it's super quiet. It's they used this thing, didn't they, where Rolls and Bentley wouldn't quote power and torque figures. They used to just say it's ample.
Yeah,
and now they do quote it, but it's still ample. We had it down at the test track, so I've got the test numbers on it as well, which is always quite amazing.
And I'm curious, like kind of the range and the performance. I mean, first of all, do you recall what it weighs? It's got to be massive. I mean,
yeah, I've got it on. I should have it on.
I
this
think my dot. Lightning I, is like 7,000 pounds, so it's got to be
6,417 on our scales.
It's almost so as much as what the Lightning weighs. Yeah. All right.
What's your 0 to 60 guess?
Because it's such a big car, I still think it happens in probably 4 seconds.
Yeah, 3.9, which I think going back in the day was like Ferrari F40 fast.
Yeah.
Quarter of a mile, 12 seconds dead at 116.3. So that's, I mean, like you can get like Tesla fanboys jumping on the call saying, ah, well, the plaid does it too. But nobody wants to sit in a Rolls Royce and do 0 to 60 in 4 seconds, frankly. You know, that's more than enough performance. And then on the skid pad, I think it was 0.96G, which again is...
That seems impressive.
That's a lot of grip, right? For something, 0.94. But that's still a... You know, that's still a pretty impressive figure. It stops well, you know, tons of grip. The only thing that it wasn't good at was the range.
I was going to say stopping.
No, stopping is good. Stopping, it'll stop. Yeah. But your range is a bit icky. So 266 on the EP. On the Edmunds EV range test, we did 281, which is okay. That's in line with most mainstream cars, but nothing compared to like a Lucid or anything like the really long range stuff.
I was kind of expecting you were going to say it was going to be around that 280 range. So that's probably about right.
So your big issue then, yeah, because it's probably not very efficient because it's 6.5. Wait, the efficiency is not great. So, but then it's that then you're into this world. So really, like, if you own one of these things, it's not your skiing car, is it? It's not your. It might get you to Palm Springs, but it's going to be your tool around,
you know,
relatively modest distances, because you're not going to call it Walmart. You're not going to stick it into even a Tesla supercharger. You're not going to, you know,
yeah,
it's not going to happen.
It's interesting because I was going to ask, why would Rolls-Royce start their EV program with a coupe, with something like the Wraith, and not with the SUV or the four-door? And my guess is you kind of answered the question right there, is because those vehicles are probably for the audience with a longer range. If you started with the Wraith and probably something with the 7 Series platform, they're going, because it's a big car, even though it's a coupe, it's a big car. They're probably going, well, how much battery, how much range, where are we with battery technology and all of that? And then, I don't know, if it was the SUV and it was 250 mile range, I'd be like, doesn't seem like it's enough range. You've got a huge vehicle, room for a massive battery, even a taller, thicker battery, right? I feel like Range Rover needs to do this as well when they come out with their electric truck. And I don't know what the range is going to be, but it needs to be at least 300 and it should be closer to 400.
Yeah, and this is, I guess, the other thing that's sort of slightly paradoxical is if you get a Phantom, then it's basically a chauffeur car.
Yeah.
And that probably then makes sense because your chauffeur's going to go and fill it up. Whereas the idea of the Rolls-Royce Coupe is that you drive it. This is your weekend.
It's the driver's
car.
Rolls-Royce, right?
Yeah. So actually, the range thing, if it kind of, I don't know, I'm not sure how to say it good, because if you've got a Cullinan or a Phantom, then actually, you know, you're going to be driven. So while you're, you know, at lunch, then, you know, whoever is going to go and top it up a bit. So we'll see. I mean, it's an integral, for all the reasons that you say, it makes total sense because it's super quiet, super talky, super relaxed. And so it's a lovely way to travel.
When they do like the SUV, the perfect audience for that is, you know, the Wynn in Las Vegas. I don't know how many like Rolls-Royce is the Wynn bought for their VIPs, but that's the perfect vehicle, right? You get the Wynn to buy 20 of those things, electric Rolls-Royces, not the coupe, but the chauffeur versions. You park them all in the garage, you just pick up your VIPs from the airport, you take them around town and you just charge it again. And like, that's the perfect, yeah, you know, vehicle for EV, because, but now, by the way, they're quiet. You pull them in the garages, you know, like without emissions and fumes and all kinds of stuff. Like there's so much more you can do with it on display.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Wynn will figure out a way to pull it right up to your room because it's got no emissions. You can just get in and maybe you get an elevator down and you just sit in your Rolls Royce the whole time. But anyway, it's gotta be a nice car to drive though.
It is a nice car. I mean, it's not sporty, you know, it sort of wallows around a little bit, you know, in the cupboard, but it's just, yeah, if you could live with like the idea of the just like, I'm rich statement that it makes, and obviously don't buy one if you can't, you know, then it's just a nice way to travel. The only thing about it, particularly driving it around LA, is it's so big that slightly means it's slightly cumbersome just because you're just always conscious of its, you know, scale and mass and stuff, but yeah, it's nice. And it's also just fun, like at that end of the market, when you realize like just the quality of the craftsmanship and the leather and the wood and the way that they do it. The only thing that sort of I didn't like was it still has like a touchscreen in the middle with, we talked about this before, like a load of BMW graphics. And I love what Bentley does with that rotating dashboard thing. So you can kind of make it look analog. You can't get away from the fact that you still got a big BMW touchscreen in the center of the dash. But then at least it works. So,
Yeah.
It's cool. I was thinking about getting it. I've always wanted a, like, you know, the 80s, like a turbo, Bentley Turbo R or Mulsanne or something.
Yeah.
I know they're like horrifically expensive to run. They're cheap to buy, horrifically expensive to run, but I've always quite fancied one just as a sort of like way of chugging around.
I was just looking at some of the auctions coming up in Arizona next week, and RM Auction is doing their event, which is always a really wonderful event just to walk around and see the cars at the Biltmore. And you know, they got some in a parking garage, and they're all on the front of the lawn in this, you know, amazing, you know, hotel. And they have a 2008 Maybach and a 2010 Rolls-Royce Phantom extended wheelbase. These are $500,000 cars when they were new. And now,
yeah, I remember flying to New York for the Maybach launch. Yeah.
And the Maybach, and this is the 62, right? It's the 62S or whatever it is, whatever the flagship one.
With the sort of business class seats in the back.
Yeah.
Which at the time was like a huge novelty.
Which, by the way, you look at the Rolls Royce, you look at the Maybach, the Maybach looks dated. It just looks like an older S-Class. And the Rolls-Royce is the one that still kind of has the classic line to it. And honestly, over the last 10 or 15 years, you really can't tell that much of the difference between a 2010 and a 2020, which is kind of what they were going for. Both of those cars, the estimate is $100,000 to $150,000. These were $500,000 cars you could go buy.
I'd be astonished if the Maybach gets that much money.
I've seen them too.
Like way cheaper than that.
Yeah.
I remember going to, I did the launch of that in New York, and there was a really, and then I met the guy who designed a guy called Olivier Boulay. They went to Mitsubishi, and he told me once he was at Mitsubishi about like the story of it. And it was designed as like a posh S-Class, which is why it looked like an S-Class.
Yeah.
And then somebody in Mercedes says, hang on a minute, we can't charge like 300 grand for something that looks like it. That's basically an S-Class. So he said, right, call it a Maybach. And they came up with this whole rebrand. And it never really worked for them, which is why Maybach is now sort of Mercedes Maybach. And they've gone back to like the original idea of let's just do a kind of tarted up, you know, fancy looking S-Class. So it's it was a really interesting story though about how they kind of made a hash of it. But it was designed to be a Mercedes. Then suddenly it was a Maybach. And I remember the chief designer saying, this thing was, you know, like they just kept layering stuff on because it's like, if it's 300 grand, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. And he's like, luxury is simplicity. And I think that's what Rolls-Royce gets right and where my gut's gone wrong.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, and Bentley. Rolls-Royce and Bentley.
I would never spend 100 grand on one of those. I mean, they weren't that. I've had a ride. I remember like being picked up in one once on some Mercedes event. They're not that great, to be honest.
On the Maybach. The Rolls-Royce. No,
the Phantom, that would still be quite a cool thing to have.
I mean, it would. Like, I would just... We talked about this on our trips to Monterey, was like, that's your, for 100 grand, you have it. Like if you have the money, you buy and you do like your road trip once a year from LA to Monterey car week. And it's the nicest drive you're going to have. And you put a few thousand miles a year, maybe just spending a week driving up to Monterey car week and driving it around and bring it back. And it's going to be the nicest ride, tons of room, and you can fit people in it. It's going to be super comfortable. And then you park it and you drive it again next year or to the next event. Like, it's the greatest road trip car. But
you also know that every time you hear a creak, you're going to be thinking, that's 50 grand.
Yeah, it's going to be expensive. You fix it yourself. You fix it yourself.
Yeah.
Shifting gears a little bit here. This is probably not so much in the wheelhouse of Edmunds, but Ford's big press release this week, their big event, was Ford's involvement in racing, that we know that they were going to commit to racing. And then Farley had some statement during the presentation, and he said, we're going to continue with gas engines until the government bans them. And that somehow turned out in the media to Farley says the government's going to ban gas engines. And that's not what he said. He was just sort of,
but the government is going to ban gas engines at some point. Or
like,
maybe.
His point was just like, we're just going to keep going with gas engines until somebody tells us officially that we can't do it anymore. Yeah. And then that wasn't, the statement was, we're going to keep going with gas engines. But instead, somehow the media turned this into, Farley says gas engines are going to be banned. So I don't know. It just,
but this was in North Carolina, isn't it? Where I guess EV penetration is probably not that high.
Not that high at all. But They unveiled some cool cars. We knew they were going to do GT3 and GT4 and they're going to get in some cool cars. Now they unveiled some of the cars with the livery on it. They're going to do the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. They're going to do the FIA World Endurance Championship. They unveiled some of the new Mustangs with that. And when you kind of see what's going on, interesting that we're really seeing the racing cars after the GTD Mustang supercar that was launched at Monterey. Although the GTD is sort of the afterthought, sort of the streetcar version of what Multimatic was building with Ford with the racing cars. But now you see the similarity, especially with that rear wing where the stanchions come off of like the C pillar for that. And I was talking earlier about like, yeah, it's an interesting design. Why does the rear wing come off like that? And I go, well, you know what? If you think about it, if it came off the deck lid, it would probably block a lot of the rear vision. And with the wing up so high and these stanchions coming off of the pillars, you probably have pretty good visibility out the rear window without anything blocking you. So that's probably part of the design. And I'm sure there's some structural thing that they've got going on to make it work. Those racing cars look good. If you like drag racing, you guys know I'm a fan of drag racing. Bob Tasca is got the new Mustang funny car. And, you know, as far as making it look like a Mustang, it's basically just stickers.
Right.
But the funny car does have a Mustang dark horse look to it. And it looks badass. It's a cool looking dragster. And again, if you guys haven't gone out to NHRA to a live event, it's worth going to. It blows your mind. It's so loud.
It reminds me of the old Ford rally car where it's like, oh, this is like basically the production focus. And it's like, right, what part is the production focus? And they're like, the door handle.
The door,
and
yeah.
And I was like, anything else? No.
Yeah.
What about the badge? No, not the badge.
I went out to some event out here at the Coliseum, and Tanner Faust was out there, and like the, I don't know, it was the Focus, maybe the Fiesta. It was like a rally cross Fiesta, and it was configured for the, you know, to go down the hill and do a few things in the Coliseum out here and then spit it back out at the top of the hill, almost like Nitro Circus in a car. And I was like, it's a tiny engine, whatever. It's like, how much boost are you running? And he's like, 60 pounds of boost. I was like, 60, 60 pounds? He's like, yeah, all the power is just boost. It's just boost. Yeah. It's the whole thing. But
it does about 10 miles before exploding.
That's it. It's so stressed. Like those things were just popping engines left and right.
I once went to a Nitro Circus event in London, and it was the weirdest thing, because if you take the Americana out of one of those events, it's just really weird.
I guess it could
because
be,
like you've just got an audience that's not like, as you know, you take all the whooping and the cheering and like the fun engagement, and you get like a slightly more sort of like subdued crowd. It's just such a weird thing. But it was still fun. I mean, those guys, what those guys do is pretty impressive.
And they put on a good show for sure. Maybe a month or two ago, I was visiting Andy Bell. He's one of the partners there, one of the founders that he did all the crazy stuff back in the day, and he runs a big production company and they still involved in the Nitro Circus stuff. But, you know, we just had conversations about it back in the day and just all the stuff they broke on themselves and on vehicles. They just so much carnage for them, and Travis Pastrana and all those guys just constantly in pain.
Yeah, it was like, it looks really dangerous, and it is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. The other vehicle that they brought out to this big Ford event was the F-150 Lightning Switchgear. And the Switchgear is, Ford went to Von Gittin Jr. and his RTR company and said, let's make an off-road version of the Lightning. So the powertrain is essentially the same. There's no real need to change it. 580 horsepower, 775 pound-feet of torque. But they essentially did like a carbon fiber wide body. It's even wider than a Raptor, significantly wider. I don't know, like 6 inches or 8 inches or something like that. Significantly wider than the Raptor, but has a lot of the suspension on it. It's got something like, I don't know, 11 inches of wheel travel in the front, 13 in the rear, double wishbone suspension in the front, multi-link independent in the rear. With long coilovers. It's got the Fox 3-inch diameter internal bypass shocks and stuff on it. So they just made just crazy off-road version of the vehicle. And they've got all these videos of Von Gittin flying through the air in this thing. But quietly, that's the thing, it's quiet.
We actually did a news piece on it, edmunds.com/news. And like what we were kind of figuring, like what Ford has tended to do in the past is, you know, is this a Lightning Raptor or are they like testing the market? You know, a lot of times they'll do something like this, partly to get a lot of social media buzz, but also just to kind of get a taste of like, is there real interest in this sort of thing? Because you could, you know, Lightning sales, as we talked about, are struggling at the moment a little bit, I think it's fair to say. So does something like this, A, work as a kind of halo product? Or B, are they just starting to feel out, is there interest in like a Lightning Raptor? Because it would be a cool, it'd be a cool thing. All that it's, talk and...
It's an interesting piece. I can't say for sure. I think this is right now just mostly a demo vehicle of sorts, because the idea of a Raptor going off road and doing some of that stuff often means you have to drive a couple of hours to get to that location where you're going to be doing that stuff. And the Raptor, obviously, I mean, the Lightning, not ideal for that scenario. Just, you know, again, it's an infrastructure thing. It's not really a vehicle thing per se. But putting like full up Recaro, like off-road seats in it and putting three captain's chairs, Recaros in the back, harnesses, fun ride along event. I'm sure you're going to see this thing at like a Ford out front event at SEMA and giving ride alongs out there. And they'll use it for that. Now there's a sport truck on-road version that they were working on as well. It's essentially the same thing, but instead of, it's still carbon fiber body, carbon fiber fenders, but instead of the metal skid plates and stuff, they get rid of all that. They do carbon fiber bumper covers and then lower it a bit. And I think they've only released the rendering of it. I don't think there's like a whole truck built yet. I'm not quite sure where they are on the status of that, but doing a sport truck version of it. Now that's more interesting. Will they autocross that? Will they throw that around the track a little bit to see, maybe take that to Goodwood, do the hill climb? Because they had the super van out, you know, last year.
I mean, Ford's doing some really cool stuff, like the Mach-E Rally, which is going on sale. You know, that, I haven't driven it yet, but that looks a really cool concept. You know, I think this is it. Like, you know, when the leader of the company sets the tone, and, you know, Jim Farley is a massive motorsport fan. It's a bit like when, you know, Akito Toyota was running Toyota, and then suddenly came out with cool cars again. You know, that if you set the tone, and, you know, it's still their heartland as well. And, you know, they're still trying to, it's a big challenge, like how you transition to EV land or hybrid land, but keep that, take that audience on the journey with you. So, you know, trying to merge together, like, although, and of course they're going into Formula One as well with Red Bull, and that's going to be a hybrid powertrain, and we're already working on that. So, you know, there's some interesting times ahead.
If I was Von Gittin Jr. and I was sitting there with the team of Ford, I would have pitched the same thing. You've got a Lightning, let's do something fun with it, and we'll just make a fun exhibition vehicle out of it. And if, you know, like, can we do it? Is it going to break? I don't know, but let's draw some attention to the platform. If anything, they're trying to show that it could be a tough vehicle. It could be a durable vehicle. All of the stuff that we're focusing on are either the range or some of the recalls or liability issue stuff. But Ford is going, it's still an F-150, and it's, you know, for what it's worth, built Ford tough is what they're trying to say. So Vaughn's like, yeah, let's just beat one up and see what happens. Like, I don't know, let's just do it. I would jump on that project. That seems like it'd be fun.
And Ken Block, bless him, had already done it with the Audi as well. So it's not, you know, there's precedence there. So yeah, it's, I think everybody's trying to say, look, you know, the world's changing a bit. The sort of things that we're going to do are changing, but, you know, we still got to keep having fun because that's what people want to do. So it's good. And it's not just, the other thing is, it's like, I'm a bit bored of all this. We do 0-60 in 2 seconds, or we do it in 1.9. Frankly, like, everything's super fast. We talked about the Rolls doing 4 seconds. You know, you don't need to go faster than that. So I think the fact that now people are saying, you know, we're seeing it with things like the Ioniq 5N from Hyundai, that they're now doing this like really exciting little hot hatchback with 600 horsepower. I think that for me is where it's starting to get interesting, that people have said, all right, everybody knows you can go faster in a straight line. actually, the interesting bit is, can we make these things super fun? And, you know, Ford's getting hold of that. Hyundai's getting hold of it. So that for me is the main interest.
I like that, the Ioniq 5N. I think that's going to be a fun little vehicle. I would say, as you guys are sitting in your planning meetings going, oh, what cars do we need to bring to our test track? That would be the number one on my list. I can't wait to get my hands on that thing and just thrash it through the paces and see what it can do. And who cares if it gets 125 miles of range at the end of the day after you guys are dogging on it? It's like, who cares? Just around town, it's small, it's low to the ground, it's probably insanely quick. I bet it's going to be a blast to drive.
Yeah, and it's a nice size. So, I mean, my wife's car, our family car, is a GV60, which is basically the same thing. And that's got 340 horsepower. And even that feels pretty rapid. And then the N has got over 600. So,
yeah. You got the little boost button on the steering wheel of your...
Performance. We didn't get the performance. Yeah. It was too much money. But it's got the sport mode. And you put it in sport mode and it retunes everything. And yeah, it's a really nice little car, the Genesis.
Yeah, I drove that one as well, and I kind of like that. And with the button on the dashes, I drove one of the Audis the other day, and I liked it. But getting it into sport mode, you have to go to the modes button and switch it to it. And then you're like, oh, if I just want to stretch its legs a little bit on an on-ramp, you have to kind of get it in your head. You want to do that ahead of time. And then I was thinking about the Genesis going, oh, but it just has this big silly button right on the steering wheel. You could just hit. And it gives you whatever 9 seconds or 5 seconds of this boosted power. And I go, you don't have to kind of overthink it. So you do use it a little bit more than switching into the sport mode of other cars. I drive my Mustang. I've been driving my Mustang Mach 1 for a couple of weeks now. And I don't really, I mean, it's fast. It's got the twin turbo and stuff on it, but I haven't really changed the mode of it because you go to the switch and you look at the dash, you see what's going on. If it just had the button on the steering wheel, it was just like, you know, even it's the simulated boost button. I thought that was a fun little feature that I found I was using more in the Genesis than digging into some of the modes of these other cars.
Talking of Mustangs, we're about to offload our GT500. And I drove that every time we've had that for years. And every time I drive it, I'm like, this is the last time I've driven it. And I drove it home and then somebody else picked it up. And I was like, that probably is the swan song. I've absolutely loved that. We should talk about your social media outreach. I don't know who it was, but for the record, I love America. I love so many American cars.
Yeah.
You should tell the story, Matt.
Somebody sent me a message going, listen, we like the podcast. Like, you guys are starting to put them up on YouTube. But what's with the British guy not liking American cars? I go, I wasn't really picking up on that completely. I think you're fine with American cars.
I bought a Tesla. I guess it depends what you call American cars. Teslas. But no, I mean, like Mustang GD500, now the price has started to drop on those things. Like, I wish I'd like, I'm not going to buy it, but I'd have loved to have bought it off the company because it's been such an amazing car. And I just love, what I love about it is the fact that, you know, you can drive it home. For my drive is like Santa Monica to Manhattan Beach where I live. And so it's all like 30 mile an hour stuff. But even at 30 miles an hour, it just feels so much fun. You know, you give it a little squirt and it lights up a little bit. It
sounds ridiculous.
Every time
you get in it, you open the exhaust and stuff on it. You just like, you could go, like you said, 30 miles an hour, but you're in sport mode doing it. So
I'm in track mode. You put it into track mode on the exhaust, and it always says, you know, refer to manual, which basically says, don't do this. You've been an obnoxious arsehole. So of course you push okay, and then like give it the full. But you know,
yeah,
it's a
bright
cool
orange
thing.
GT500. So already,
yeah,
you're being obnoxious. People are already noticing you on the car. So it's
a bit like driving the Rolls. Yeah,
yeah, it's a bit like driving the Rolls as far as that's concerned, but
I have, yeah.
How many miles?
I am
you guys
almost
got on
American
that
now. How many what?
How many miles?
20, is it 25? Something like 25,000. I mean, it's probably one of the most high mileage GT500s out there.
It
I think it's 27. Yeah.
It's
had
is.
A good life.
It's got 25,000 miles on it because any way you look at it, your staff likes driving that car.
Yeah, everyone. I mean, it's hard. It's impossible not to. It's such and it's so benign. And I guess the one thing is, I think there's going to be another one, isn't there? They're going to probably do another one. Maybe this is the last one. So it'll be interesting.
I can say with some confidence there's going to be some Shelby version of a Mustang happening. We have the Dark Horse, but the Dark Horse, again, is a naturally aspirated version. It basically replaced either the Bullet or the Mach 1, depending on what
generation
you're looking at.
Yeah, and it's not that sharp. It's not a Shelby.
Yeah, and it's not a Shelby. So there's going to be a Shelby at some point. It just makes sense to fit in the lineup. You fill in all the blanks between EcoBoost and all the way up to even GTD, I guess you could say, but you kind of fill in the blanks there. And there's going to be some sort of hotter version of the Mustang, hotter version than the Dark Horse. So, all right, what do you say? We're going to wrap things up for today. We're going to try to get another show in the can for next week, and then I'm gonna head out to Arizona auction week.
Big thing next week. We're launching on the 24th our Edmunds Top Rated Award. So I think next week's show is going to be devoted to talking about the runners and riders and the winners. That's been a huge project. I don't think people ever really appreciate how much work goes into these things, but really excited to be unveiling it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I can't wait to get to hear what you guys were getting into over there, but. Guys, I appreciate it. We'll see you guys next week. So until next time, keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on carcastshow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.